जशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना जशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरवनचारी यमुना तीरवनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरवनचारी यमुना तीरवनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय ओम विष्णु पाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य स्तोत्र श्री श्रीमद हिस दवाएं गए श्रेय से भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय नितय गो प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बो समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय आ गवेश दी असम्बल देवती आ गवेश दी असम्बल देवती Hargreaves to the assembled devotees, Hargreaves to Sri Sri Guru Gaurango. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 15, Description of the Kingdom of God, Text Number 17. Word meanings, Vaimanikaha, flying in their airplanes, Salalanaha, along with their wives, Charitani, activities, Shushvat, eternally, Gayanti, sing, Yatra, in those Vaikuntha planets, Shamala. All inauspicious qualities, Shapanani, devoid of, Bhartu, of the Supreme Lord, Antaha Jale, in the midst of the water, Anuvikasat, blossoming, madhu, fragrant, laden with honey. Madhavi Nam, of the Madhavi flowers. Gandhena, by the fragrance. Khandita, disturbed, dhya, minds. Api, even though. Anilam, breeze. Shipantaha, deriding. Vaimanika salalanas charitani shashwad. Gayanti yatra shamalakshapanani bhartu. Antarjalena vikasan madhu madhavinam. Gandhena kandita diyopyanilam kshipanta. Vaimanika salalanas charitani shashvad. Gayanti yatra shamalakshapanani bhartu. Antarjalena vikasan madhu madhavinam. Gandhena kandita diyopyanilam kshipanta. Vaimanika salalana charitani shashvad. Gayanti yatra shamalakshapanani bhartu. Antarjalena vikasan madhu madhavinam. Gandhena kandita diyopyanilam kshipanta. Vaimanika salalanas charitani shashvad. Gayanti yatra shamalakshapanani bhartu. Antarjalena vikasan madhu madhavinam. Gandhena kandita diyopyanilam kshipantah. Vaimanika salalanas charitani shashvad. Gayanti yatra shamalakshapanani bhartu. Antarjalena vikasan madhu madhavinam. Gandhena kandita diyopyanilam kshipanta. Vaimanika salalanas charitani shashvad. Gayanti yatra shamalakshapanani bhartu. Antarjalena vikasan madhu madhavinam. Gandhena kandita diyopyanilam kshipanta. Vaimanika Lalanascharitani Shashwad. Gayanti Yatra Shamala Kshapanani Bhartu. Antarjalenu Vikasan Madhumadavinam. Gandena kandita diyo pyanilam chipantaha. Vaimanika salalanascharitani shashvad. Gayanti yatra shamala kshapanani bhartu. Dajyalenu vikasan madhu madhivina. Vandena kandita diyo pyanilam shripanta.
Translation. In the Vaikuntha planets, the inhabitants fly in their airplanes, accompanied by their wives and consorts, and eternally sing of the character and activities of the Lord, which are always devoid of all inauspicious qualities. While singing the glories of the Lord, they deride even the presence of the blossoming Madhavi flowers, which are fragrant and laden with honey. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It appears from this verse that the Vaikuntha planets are full of all opulences. There are airplanes on which the inhabitants travel in the spiritual sky with their sweethearts. There is a breeze carrying the fragrance of blossoming flowers, and this breeze is so nice that it also carries the honey of the flowers. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha, however, are so interested in glorifying the Lord that they do not like the disturbance of such nice breeze, when they are chanting the Lord's glories. In other words, they are pure devotees. They consider glorification of the Lord more important than their own sense gratification. In the Vaikuntha planets, there is no question of sense gratification. To smell the fragrance of a blossoming flower is certainly very nice, but it is simply for sense gratification. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha give first preference to the service of the Lord, not their own sense gratification. Serving the Lord in transcendental love yields such transcendental pleasure that in comparison, sense gratification is counted as insignificant. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
It always strikes me as somewhat humorous, I guess is the word, I don't know, that we talk about the inhabitants of Vaikuntha and then their wives as if the wives are not inhabitants of Vaikuntha. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha refers to the men. It's stated that way several places, actually. We see that kind of phrasing going on here. The inhabitants and their wives. So anyway, the wives are also inhabitants. And so here we're hearing something about, in some sense, you look at this and it seems like, you know, ordinary in a certain sense, that they're doing conceivable things, you can say. Husband and wives, actually, as Prabhupada says here in the translation, or isn't the word for it, he says they're wives and consorts. So I'm not sure what the difference is between a wife and a consort. But anyway, Prabhupada uses that, wives and consorts. So they fly around in their airplanes, which apparently is fun.
People wonder what happens in the spiritual world, so this is one thing we learn. They have airplanes there and they fly around. Kind of makes you wonder, at least it makes me wonder, what does this have to do with service to Krishna, flying around in their airplane? Maybe to get from one service to another, I don't know. Or maybe it's just pleasing to Lord Vishnu to see them flying around. So in any case, they're doing that. And the atmosphere is so wonderful. It's interesting, Prabhupada, the way he talks about sense gratification. The way he says it is that is the way we tend to think of it. Sense gratification is something bad and we try to avoid. But sense gratification really means something that's pleasing to the senses. So naturally, a spiritual sky is everything is pleasing to the spiritual senses. It's not, what it tends to imply for ourselves, the way we use the term, it means some kind of selfish thing. And instead of serving Krishna, I want to satisfy my senses. But of course, we get all kinds of sense gratification. We have nice fragrances, nice flowers, we smell them, and the incense, and of course, prasadam is certainly sense gratification in the sense that our senses are being gratified, or it's something that's pleasing to our senses. So that's kind of neutral way you can talk about sense gratification. But Prabhupada seems to be taking it here also in another sense, that it's just, what he says, it's just insignificant. It's not that they think about it or concerned about it, or that it's their purpose. In the material world, it becomes our purpose to gratify the senses. But there it's just incidental. It's naturally just a wonderful place. The real opulence of the spiritual world is service to the Supreme Lord. And of course, that's the most satisfying thing. That's what the devotees want. All the inhabitants of the spiritual world, that's their highest pleasure, is the service of Krishna. And that's the qualification for getting there. Naturally, we want to go to that place. It sounds so wonderful. I think sometimes maybe in the back of our minds we talk about, we want to go back to Godhead. So maybe what we're thinking is because everything will be so nice there. We're not necessarily thinking because then I can serve Krishna 24 hours a day. That's really what I want. Is that really what I want, or I just want to go to some happy place? It's heaven, but it's our spiritual version of it, but the idea is basically the same. I'll be eternally happy there. Of course, Prabhupada would phrase it that way too. It's a place you can go. It's eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. So it's full of bliss. Yeah, I want to go there, that blissful place. But the essence of it is service to Krishna. And unless you're saturated with the desire to serve Krishna, actually you wouldn't be comfortable there. Even though it's such a wonderful place, the atmosphere is so wonderful, you'd feel out of place because that's all people do. That's all people talk about. No one is glorifying you there. Everyone is glorifying the Supreme Lord. So we have, a particular view that we get from the Bhagavatam. In many ways, some of the presentations of the Bhagavatam are sort of condensed versions because the Bhagavatam covers so many different subjects and it doesn't necessarily cover everything in great depth or great detail. So we have books of other great devotees. I was going to read a little something today from Brihad Bhagavatamrita about the Vaikuntha planets. I was wondering whether I should explain what this Brihad Bhagavatamrita is. I assume at least you've heard the name, but of course it was written by Srila Sanatana Goswami. And Brihad Bhagavatamrita means it's the great book of the nectar of the Bhagavatam. So Sanatana Goswami has presented the philosophy of the Bhagavatam in a kind of story format. And there are two parts, two stories. In the first one, Narada Muni is trying to find out the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. And he goes from one devotee to another. There's a whole progression where he goes higher and higher devotees. He starts with some simple brahmana, poor brahmana, who's worshiping his deity, maybe Shalagram Shila, I think. And Narada glorifies him. He sends him to a king who has a whole kingdom. It's very opulent. He's worshiping the Lord in great opulence. But that when Narada glorifies the king for that, he says, well, this is nothing. I'm just an ordinary human being. You should go to King Indra, the heavenly planets, and see how he worships the Lord, what mercy he's gotten. So there's this whole progression. So it goes to Indra, then Brahma, then Shiva. And Shiva sends Narada Muni to Prahlad Maharaj. And Prahlad sends him to Hanuman. And Hanuman sends him to the Pandavas. And then the Pandavas send him to Dwarka to see the Yadus, because the Pandavas, of course, they're great devotees, but they think, well, the Yadus, the Krishna's Yadu dynasty in Dwarka, they're really getting Krishna's mercy because they get to see him all the time. So when Narada Muni glorifies the Yadus there, then King Ugrasena says, actually, yes, we've gotten a lot of mercy, but Uddhava, he really gets the mercy because he gets to associate with Krishna all the time. So that's kind of that first part of it ends in Dwarka. There's more in Leela that unfolds there. But what we learn, we're getting a higher and higher understanding, or deeper and deeper understanding of what pure devotional service is and different levels of devotees. So what we learn in the Dwarka section of the first part is that the greatest recipients of Krishna's mercy are actually the Brajbasis. And even the devotees in Dwarka, they recognize that. Of course, they see that Krishna is always longing for Vrindavan and his associates in Vrindavan and so on. So we learn that at the end of the first part. So in the second part, now this, the whole context of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is that Mother Uttara, the mother of King Parikshit, has asked Parikshit after he has heard the Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami, if he can give her a summary of what he heard, what he learned from Shukadeva Goswami. There's a little bit of time left after Shukadeva is finished. At least that's the way it's framed in this scripture. So Uttara asks him. So his presentation is the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So in the second part, after she has heard the first part of Narada's travels and what she has learned there, she has this feeling that these high devotees that we heard about at the end, they must have some special position in the spiritual world, because devotees are higher and higher, so their level of ecstasy must be higher and higher and well, and they must have a special place where they live. So in the second part, there's some building. There's another story, actually. There's this devotee, cowherd boy of Vrindavan, who's telling his story, how he attained perfection. He actually, you hear in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, how he goes to Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world. But he also sometimes returns to the earthly Vrindavan. So there's this another seeker who's trying to understand the truth. The seeker has been given a mantra by his guru, worshipping Madan Gopal, or Krishna. And he happens to meet Gopakumar in Vrindavan, who's a cowherd boy, who has also received this same mantra, worshipping Krishna. So Gopakumar tells his story, how he was just a simple cowherd boy, and how he doesn't know anything, really. He just chants this mantra. And by the power of this mantra, he travels all over the universe. So in the second part, so Uttara, she begins by asking about the, you might say, the hierarchy or the different levels of devotees in the spiritual world. So I'll just read a little something here. There's some interesting information here about what's going on there in the spiritual world. We hear about different devotees. So this is chapter 1 of the second part, text 15. The pure devotees living in Vaikuntha, this is Uttara speaking here. She's inquiring from her son, but she speaks quite a bit, giving her own realizations at the beginning. The pure devotees living in Vaikuntha enjoy forever in varied ways of happiness, directly serving Sri Krishna's lotus feet. It's interesting because even in Vaikuntha, at least Ray Sanatana Goswami has written the book, he often uses the name Krishna rather than Vishnu or Narayan. He just refers to Vishnu as Krishna. But here she's talking about Vaikuntha generally here. So everyone in varied ways enjoys serving Krishna's lotus feet, because of course Vishnu is Krishna, but he's just appearing in that form. In comparison, the nectar of liberation appears condemned, she says. Among the Supreme Lord's devotees, some are devotees attached to knowledge. Excuse me. Let me read the Sanskrit to this. This is Jnana Bhaktas tu Teshwe Ke Shuddha Bhakta Pare Pare Prema Bhakta Pare Prema Para Prema Tura Para. So this verse gives different kinds of devotees in Goloka Vrindavan, in Vaikuntha, or the spiritual world in general. So it says, among the Supreme Lord's devotees, some are devotees attached to knowledge, and others are pure. Still others are situated in love of God, others are immersed in love of God, and yet others are painfully overwhelmed by love of God. So this is the way these different kinds of devotees are translated. So we'll read about them in the commentary here. So this commentary is Sanatana Goswami's own commentary. He wrote the book. Although it's explained in the beginning that this is actually an eternal revealed scripture, which Sanatana Goswami, because of his level of realization, is able to just repeat it, basically. In the commentary, Sanatana Goswami says, Vaishnavas develop their love of God to different extents, and thus in any given lifetime attain different destinations. Jnana Bhaktas cultivate devotional service mixed with the pursuit of knowledge. Their interests focus on subjects such as the greatness of devotion to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. For them, devotional service of activities, for them, devotional service consists of activities within the ninefold practice of sadhana bhakti. So this first thing that's noteworthy here is that these devotees are in Vaikuntha, but they're called jnana bhaktas. So they still have an attraction to jnana. So they're, you might say, on the lowest stratum of those who are eligible to actually enter into and live in the Vaikuntha planets. And their devotional service consists of activities within the nine practices of sadhana bhakti. So of course, to us, well, we say, well, of course. But somehow, that's sort of foundational, you might say. That's what they do. Hearing, chanting, remembering, and so on in Vaikuntha. That's what they're attracted to. And they're also attracted to knowledge. They still have some attraction to jnana. It says, an example of such a Vaishnava, of course, in the material world, is Lord Rishabhdev's son, Bharat Maharaj. So he was on that level, Bharata Maharaj. I think later it also mentions Priyavrata Maharaj. So then it says, this is the second level is next, Shuddha Bhaktas. Of course, Shuddha means pure. So it's translated as pure devotees. So if Jnana Bhaktas and Shuddha Bhaktas, the second level. Next, Shuddha Bhaktas want only devotional service to the personality of Godhead, without any mixture of fruitive work, knowledge, or renunciation. So these things are considered contaminations. Now, if you know the definition of pure devotional service, anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma jnanavritam, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami defines pure devotional service, or uttama bhakti, as being free of these things. So somehow the jnana bhaktas, they're not completely free, of jnana at least, but still they're eligible to go to Vaikuntha. But here it says, so these Shuddha Bhaktas, they don't have any inclination for karma, jnana, or even vairagya. So it says, Ambarish Maharaj is a typical Shuddha Bhakta. So Ambarish Maharaj is placed above Bharat Maharaj. So then it goes on, Prema Bhaktas, like Sri Hanuman, are endowed with mature ecstatic love. That comes out in the first part of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. They perpetually serve the Lord with full-hearted enthusiasm, being interested only in the loving affection, intimate association, and opportunities for service that they find at the lotus feet of their beloved spiritual master. Still other devotees are prema-pada-bhaktas. like Sriman Arjuna and his brothers. As I was explaining before, Hanuman sent Narada to the Pandavas. So the Pandavas are considered higher than Hanuman. So they are not interested in the process of bhakti itself, but only in prema, ecstatic love. They don't think about sadhana in any way. They're just in love with Krishna. And of course, they get Krishna's association a lot. Krishna lives with them when he visits Hastinapur. He spends months with them. By the causeless mercy of the Lord, entirely pure prema of the highest quality has arisen in their hearts, binding them by ropes of eagerness to see the Lord and enjoy friendly talks and other intimate dealings with him. Of course, when Arjuna sees the universal form, then he's, you know, he's like shocked, and he starts asking Krishna to forgive him for being so friendly with him. But of course, that's his relationship with Krishna. They exchange with equals. And there, even when Krishna has left the planet and Arjuna is explaining to Yudhishthira after he returns from Dwarka to deliver the news, so then he's lamenting about Krishna's disappearance, and he takes on this mood. He said, sometimes I would, in a sense, kind of belittle you because you would be bragging about how greatly you fought, and I would say, oh, yeah, you're so great, yeah. The kind of way we talk to our close friends, that kind of thing, teasing. So Arjuna says, oh, boy, I did that with Krishna. Imagine how wonderful Krishna was that he allowed me to do that with him, you know, to interact with him in that way. And now he's gone, now he's left us. Let's see. So finally, so the fifth level of these bhaktas is the prema-atura bhaktas, such as the Yadavas. So again, the Pandavas sent Narada to the Yadavas, the Yadus dynasty in Dwarka, headed by Sriman Uddhava. So Uddhava is the greatest of the Yadus because he gets Krishna's association all the time. So they are overwhelmed by the incessant bliss of prema and the intense desire to relish all the transformations of that prema and its related ecstasies. Although everyone in Vaikuntha has prema, we must recognize different degrees of prema. The natural perfection of Shuddha Bhakti is prema bhakti. In other words, the perfection of the lower level is to go up to the next level. So first you have the Jnana Bhaktas, which he doesn't even mention in this list. The natural perfection of Shuddha Bhakti is prema bhakti, which is higher because devotees who have reached prema have special qualities not found in those who have attained only Shuddha Bhakti. And beyond prema bhakti, the prema pada devotees are more elevated and the prema atura bhaktas still more. So that's something about the different kinds of devotees. So this is chapter one of the second part. So in chapter four, now again, this Gop Kumar is explaining his journey as he's going to higher and higher levels of the universe. He goes actually from Brahmaloka, then, or maybe he comes, because sometimes he returns sometimes to Jagannath Puri and sometimes to Vrindavan in his travels, and then he goes up again. So anyway, at some point he goes through the different coverings of the universe. And there he sees different personalities worshiping different forms of the Lord, different avatars. For example, in the earth layer, then I guess his mother Bhumi is worshiping Lord Varahadev. That kind of thing goes on in the layers of the universe, covering the universe. So then just outside that is Lord Shiva's abode, the abode of liberation. Well, there's the abode of liberation and then Lord Shiva's abode. Then after Lord Shiva's abode, one goes to, he goes to Vaikuntha. Well, what happens, we hear about Gopakumar is telling his story, how he meets Lord Shiva. So while he's there in Lord Shiva's abode, some of the residents of Vaikuntha come there. They're traveling to somewhere in the material world, actually, where the Lord is being worshipped. So they come, I think that's the context. Anyway, so Gopakumar there, he meets the residents of Vaikuntha, and they tell him how great Vaikuntha is. They want him to go to Vaikuntha. So he speaks to Lord Shiva. Now, one thing about Gopakumara is wherever he is, first, when he first gets there, he thinks this is the highest thing. But after a while, one thing is because his natural attraction is to serving Krishna. He's a coward boy. And wherever he goes, he dresses as a coward boy. Even in Vaikuntha, where everyone is dressed in a different way, they try to get him to change his clothes, but he won't. He wants to stay in that way. So first in Shiva Loka, he thinks, well, this is really wonderful here. But after some time, he hears from the Vaikuntha Dutas about Vaikuntha, and Lord Shiva encourages him, yes, you should go to Vaikuntha. They've invited you to go there. But first of all, I don't know if Lord Shiva sends him here. I think maybe he does. Or he's told to go to Goloka Vrindavan, and from there you'll attain Vaikuntha. Gokula on the earth, Boma Vrindavan. And from there you'll attain Goloka. So he goes there, he goes to Vrindavan on earth, and he meets his guru, and his guru says, yes, you'll get all perfections, just chant Hare Krishna, basically. So he starts chanting, and he goes into ecstasy, and really loses himself there in his ecstasy of thinking of Krishna, worshiping Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna. And then the Vaikuntha Dutas, they arrive there in Boma Vrindavan, and they take him to Vaikuntha in the spiritual world. So there's a whole scene there. I don't know if I'm going to have time to read any of this. I just want to read part of it. I have a page written down here, page 625. So he arrives there at the gates of Vrindavan. He flies in some transcendental airplane. Everything is so amazing, he just can't explain it. Even the appearance of the Vaikuntha Dutas is just overwhelming to him. And then the vehicle that takes him there is just so astounding, he just can't even express how wonderful and amazing it is. It's beyond words that are available on the earth, you can say. So he gets there, and the Vaikuntha Dutas, they drop him off at the gates of Vaikuntha. And he has to wait a little bit. So he gets there, and then a messenger goes inside and says, just wait here. Or one of them goes in, actually. So here, I'll start reading here. So first they take him there. They offer to make him look like them with four arms and so on. He says, no, I'll stay like this. So then, he goes through, actually, he sees all the upper regions of the universe. And he's embarrassed because the places where he's gone, they see that he's going to Vaikuntha. Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, and others, great sages, they see that he's in a Vaikuntha airplane, and he's going, so they know he's going to Vaikuntha. So they're all praising him because, wow, Gopakumar, he's such an elevated, exalted soul. So they're offering prayers to him and praising him, and he's embarrassed because he was just there and he was praising them. He sees how opulent they are. So anyway, so he's praised. He goes also, Lord Shiva and Uma, they also offer their congratulations to him. And then he arrives there. And then one of them goes inside. I'll start here. It says, the associates of the Lord told me, please wait here for a moment outside. We should take permission from our Lord before bringing you into his city. Stay calm. Because he always loses it. You can imagine the journey he's on. And with your eyes illumined by devotion for the Lord, count the waves of the vast ocean of wonders that flow here, one after another, wonders you have never seen or heard of before. Gopakumar said, so he's explaining this to the person known as the Brahmana of Mathura. So he's on earth where he's explaining this. He's in Vrindavan. So Gopakumar said, they went in and I stood outside in the pavilion of the entrance gate. I then beheld someone coming and entering that great city. He rode on a transcendental vehicle endowed with the opulences of hundreds of universes. So, try to paint some picture. We see a little opulence, what we can perceive. So imagine the opulence all added up together of hundreds of universes. So he was endowed with the opulence of hundreds of universes. Music and other entertainment filled him with delight. He resembled the Supreme Lord in luster and beauty. I thought he was Sri Hari, and I cried out again and again, O Lord, protect me, and bowed down to him. But he covered his ears and gestured for me to stop. I am a servant, he told me, a servant of the servants, and he moved on into the city. A short while later, another person came by, splendid with even more power and opulence. I looked at him and thought, surely this must be the Lord of the universe. He must have gone somewhere as a pastime, and now he is entering his own abode. When the person saw me bowing down with gestures of reverence and offering him prayers, as I honored the one before, he affectionately spoke to me the same way and entered the city. Many others came, some alone, others in pairs, and yet others together in larger groups. And all of them, each more splendid than the last, entered the city of the Lord. Now, I'll just mention this because I'm not sure if it comes up in this section. But it also talks about people entering with their families. Actually, that's another whole section probably I won't have time to get to. So we think, because we tend to have this picture maybe, and we have paintings like that, everyone's four-handed Narayan form, and they're all, you know, like human form. We don't see any kids running around or pets or any, well, there may be animals, I suppose, we hear about. But that's another whole thing. There's a whole section that talks about all the different forms, unlimited forms you can take in the spiritual world to serve the Lord. He says, seeing them as they passed by, I was immersed in an ocean of awe. Again and again, I bowed down and offered prayers, and each time again, they stopped me with nectarian affectionate words. So anyway, finally, someone comes to get him, takes him through the gate, and of course he has to go through, I guess it's seven gates, and every time he goes through one gate, that's not explained in detail here, but there's some mention of it, maybe in one of the commentaries. It's not that there's just a gate, and then a gate, and then a gate, but there's a gate, and then there's like this whole world there. There's another whole atmosphere. There's cities, and there are people, and there are all kinds of amazing things going on. So then the closer gets to Lord Narayan, the more amazing it is. So one after the other, he goes through all these gates. And finally, let's see, when he finally sees, here it is. It does say, some are with their families. It said some with an array of things, and others had left their families and things outside. So it's like they're returning from somewhere. I don't know where they go. And they leave their baggage outside, and they go into Vaikuntha. Okay, so it talks about some of them, how they look like. Here we go. Some appeared as humans, some as monkeys, demigods, demons, or sages. Some looked like Indra, Chandra, and other demigods. Some had three eyes, or four heads, or four arms, or eight, or 1,000 faces. There you go. Later I shall explain to you the reasons. So that's the whole section. Because actually what happens later is that Narada comes onto this. Narada shows up everywhere. So he shows up in Vaikuntha as well, and he explains a bunch of things to Gopakumar. Let's see, the residents of Vaikuntha transcend everything material. For persons within the material creation, the manifold glories of those residents and of the Vaikuntha world and its master are beyond analogy and beyond the power of words to describe. So you can't even really say, well, it's like this, because it's not like that. Any conception you can get, it's not going to come close to what's actually going on there in Vaikuntha. It says, nevertheless, my dear Brahmana, you are a resident of the material world, and your intelligence is confined because you can see only matter. Therefore, I say, it is like this, so that my material examples, you might understand various things more easily. Then he says, may Lord Hari forgive this offense. In other words, comparing Vaikuntha to anything in the material world, this is offensive, the devotee thinks. So let's see. Okay, let me get to where he meets. He meets Lord Narayan. And of course, he's in the most opulent surroundings, which he says again. He says, except by direct experience, no one can rightly understand Vaikuntha, No more than this can I accurately describe. So anyway, so then he goes in and he meets the Lord. So one, of course, notable thing about Gopa Kumar is that he, you know, his personality doesn't change. He's a cowherd boy. He was born as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, and then his eternal form is also as a cowherd boy. And he's happy for some time every place he goes, but then he starts, you know, itching to move on because he hasn't really reached the final destination, even though often he thinks that he has. Well, here's a description. So in the palace, of course, he goes through the gate and then he sees Lord Narayan's palace. Then he said, within that palace I saw before me at a distance the personality of Godhead, Lord of Vaikuntha. He sat at leisure on the best of royal thrones, a golden throne shimmering with the glow of many jewels. The cushion on which he sat was of swan-white cotton, fine, attractive, spotlessly clean, and the soft, handsome bolster on which he leaned his left elbow and upper arm, so he's sitting casually, appeared like the full moon cleansed of its spots. He was the presiding lord of blossoming youth. The brilliant effulgence of his sweet, attractive limbs defeated the splendor of new rain clouds. That effulgence lent further grace to his garlands, cosmetics, and garments, already graced by jewelry made of gold bedecked with gems. So anyway, so there's a description of Lord. His broad chest, decorated the Kostuba jewel, and so on. So there in Vaikuntha, of course, Gopal, that he sees him as Krishna, actually. So he calls out, "Oh, Gopal!" So the Vaikuntha Vasi said, no, you don't do that here. That, you know, everything here is, we have our decorum, and you can't be so friendly like that. But actually what happens is Lord Narayan, of course he knows, he's Narayan, he knows everything, he's God, he knows everything. So he understands Gopa Kumar. So he's attracted, for one thing, that he's a cowherd boy, and he likes that. He says, all right, you can stay like that. And can you play the flute? So one thing about Gopa Kumar, he's an extra flute player. So he entertains Lord Narayan by playing his flute and dancing around and doing things that cowherd boys do. And that becomes a regular pastime of him in Vaikuntha, where he's able to act like a cowherd boy and play his flute and satisfy the Lord in that way. So it's a fairly long chapter, actually. There's a whole description, as I was mentioning before, about the forms of the Lord. It's just amazing. It's just endless. One thing we learn is that the devotees, for example, if you're a devotee of the avatars have their own places, but also Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayan, he appears as the form that the devotee has the attraction to. For example, if you're a devotee of Lord Varaha or Lord Kurma or different avatars of the Lord, then you see the Lord in that way. And you can even, you take forms that please the Lord. So sometimes you devotees, they take the form of that avatar and then they somehow interact with the Lord and they please him. It's all about pleasing him. The devotee can take any form. They take the forms of plants. They take the forms of, you know, insects, because everything is there. So whatever it is, bees, for example, they can take the form, any form. And of course, and even, you know, trees and mountains and streams or whatever. And of course, it's all about that. It's the, you can say, the gushing of the prema from the heart, which inspires the devotees how to please the Lord. Prabhupada says sometimes, we should always be thinking how to please the Lord. So in Vaikuntha, that's how they're thinking. And then whatever they want, they get that form. They get the spiritual form, and then they offer. Because another thing, of course, it's always new. Everything is new. Nothing gets stale there. So they can invent, of course, forms that don't exist, create new forms. It's unlimited. So that's the idea here. So this is Vaikuntha. So, of course, we understand that sometimes it's said, the highest planet in Vaikuntha is Goloka Vrindavan. Or sometimes, of course, the separation is made. There's Vaikuntha, and then there's Goloka. So we know that Goloka Vrindavan is unlimited times more opulent than Vaikuntha. because it has a special opulence of sweetness, which in the context of, you know, opulence, the sweetness of Krishna, that's greater than all of these other opulences. And actually these also pale in comparison to the opulence of Vrindavan. Even a flower in Vrindavan is more opulent than anything in Vaikuntha, because it's Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's original place. He's the original Lord, so everything there is of a higher standard. So it's interesting, because we look at we hear something like this, and Gopa Kumar keeps saying, I can't really describe it, but we hear about Goloka Vrindavan, and we think, well, it seems normal. It's just a forest, and there's cows there, but somehow or other, it's beyond what we can conceive. Everything is beyond us there. Okay. I was afraid if I read it was going to take a long time, so sorry. Only 5 minutes left. Anyone like to add or question or subtract? Or
so initially you mentioned about jnana, the devotees who were attracted to jnana.
Yeah.
So one thought came to my mind, that is that how the four Kumars, they gain entrance, or they can go? Or
the Kumars, at least there are those that have, people can take the forms of the Kumars. That's one thing that happens. Now, one thing is, I was reading this now, I was thinking, does it really say exactly here that they're in Vaikuntha? I was thinking, maybe I misread this. Maybe the Jnana Bhaktas don't go to Vaikuntha. So it's not exactly clear to me. I was thinking when I read it that they did go to Vaikuntha. But then when they actually, in that last paragraph, it just started with the Shuddha Bhaktas. It skipped the Jnana Bhaktas. So now I'm not 100% sure that the Jnana Bhaktas actually go to Vaikuntha. But then it also said that they're all maybe not, because Shuddha Bhakta, that's, you know, pure devotees, it begins, they're the second level above the Jnana Bhaktas. So I'm not 100% sure that I had that accurate.
Question, or like you to comment, is that, like, in the end you were saying the descriptions, you know, you cannot describe Vaikuntha, or you're talking about Goloka Vrindavan and the opulence and the sweetness. But it seems in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatan Goswami, very much so in the end, he makes the point that the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan and Gokula, is the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like he says, at least to me it sounded like he was saying it's exactly the same. There's no difference. Almost to the point, like, it looks the same, it's the same.
Well, if we can perceive it, it's the same. I guess that's the idea. You can see it. Just like the Goswamis, they were seeing the trees, or, you know, the roots of the trees are decorated with valuable jewels and so on. In the Goswami Ashtaka, it's said like that. So they were seeing different. You can see, you know, it looks. It's the same. The prakat and aprakat lila of the Lord are the same too. Not 100%, but for the most part. So these things are going on for those who can see.
So,
but
the
of
vision.
Course, not so easy for us to see. We're seeing pigs and thorns and rascal monkeys stealing your glasses. No monkeys to steal you. Maybe the monkeys don't steal your glasses in Goloka. That's the difference.
Or they give them back.
They give you back a better pair.
They don't need,
they don't need to trade them for anything, because they got all they want. Yes, Guru Prasad.
I have a similar question about the Gyanis. What knowledge are they seeking? Is it more about Krishna, or what else do they want to
know?
Well,
I can think, yeah, I was thinking of that too. What knowledge do they want? I was thinking they want to learn more about Krishna, you might say. That Vaikuntha, they want to know. But that's, of course, that's bhakti, to want to learn about Krishna. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. So maybe that's another indication that maybe they're not in Vaikuntha. They're Jnana Bhaktas in higher places. Just like when you hear about Gopakumar, he goes to Maharloka, and I don't know, he doesn't go to Janaloka, I don't think, but Tapaloka, Brahmaloka. So he meets these great sages there. They're always in meditation. The first place, they're all offering sacrifices, and they see the Mahapurusha, the Lord of Sacrifice, directly. And then their devotees doing meditation, they're seeing the Lord within their heart constantly. So these are really, they're pure devotees, although maybe they're not stated to be that way. But they also, somehow or other, they're still, in a sense, you might say, they're seeking somehow, because they haven't left the material world yet. So there's still something missing. It shows what is the uniqueness of pure devotional service without that at all. But whether or not, there are jnanis in Vaikuntha who are still trying to understand things, maybe that's not exactly what's being stated, although I basically said it like that, but then I was rethinking it. I'm not exactly sure about that. It's hard to imagine someone. Of course, one thing is, everything is there in Vaikuntha, so there can be sages also. So what do sages do? They can, they pursue jnana. So there may be some way to do that in Vaikuntha. Because it says here, actually, they have forms of sages. That's one of the forms that you see. And even one thing that's always curious to me is Indra. Whenever Indra is described, he's always described as having all these eyes. So even in Vaikuntha, so I think, does Indra always have these eyes? And this is a backstory, always the same. But that doesn't seem that way. I think maybe Purandar Indra did that, but every Indra did that? Raped Ahalya? It's hard to imagine, right? But sometimes another thing I found interesting is we have, I might have mentioned this, there are descriptions of Laghu Bhagavatamrita that they're the Avarana Devas, the forms of the Lord, actually, incarnations of the Lord that surround Narayan and Vaikuntha. And it's the ones that are mentioned, they're all avatars that we know. But we hear that there's, so many unlimited different kinds of avatars. But I think it was curious that it's the avatars that we're familiar with who happen to be circling Vaikuntha. It seems to limit the forms of the avatars. Okay, we're a minute over, but if you'd like to ask.
I just have a Hare Krishna. Thanks for the lecture. Quick question. So you said that nine processes of devotional service, the beginning stages, like the basic platform?
Yeah, it says that those who are jnana bhaktas, they like to perform those. I think the idea is that they do it as a kind of a practice, whereas the higher devotees, they're just in ecstasy. It's almost like we have a separation between vaidhi bhakti and raganuga bhakti. So they're in one sense, you might say, because they're jnanas, it's sort of like they're still in some sense in vaidhi bhakti and they're still engaged in these practices. Although they love doing these practices, they're on a high level. But somehow, it wasn't elaborated on, so I don't know, I can't really say, but that's the way it's stated. That's their attachment, you can say, is to the practices. Now, one thing we learn in the Madhurya Kadambani is that as one progresses higher and higher in the early stages of attraction to Krishna, first there's the bhava of the service. One gets ecstasy from the service itself. And then the higher level is one gets ecstasy from Krishna's association directly. So it may have something to do with this kind of progression that the devotees are going higher and higher. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.